The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Welcome back to another episode.
2 hours.
Another episode of We the People Radio.
A fun and frivolity.
Yeah, and information. So here at We the People, we like it when you call in, but we always forget to give you the number. So we're going to get that out of the way. It's 530-605-4567. And one really important point is the website, wethepeopleradio.us. And on there, you will find all sorts of archives stretching back into 2010. You'll also, if you go to the archive page, last night I spent a little bit of extra time, and I put up some future shows that we have booked. So thought I'd just give you a little heads up there. Next week, we have William Kay from Canada. He has eco-fascism is his website. So he believes that environmentalism is fascism. And he believes it so strongly that he was persecuted by listeners on his own radio program and got enough death threats, he took himself off the air.
That's always
so he
fun.
Comes on our show.
Yeah, that's always fun.
Isn't that great? You figure if they were in Canada trying to kill him, they're not going to come all the way down here. You know, it's too much work. And then March 1st, really important, there is a Technocracy Town Hall. So we've had Patrick Wood on a couple times. The Technocracy Rising book is the one that we covered. I hope you will read it. It's
because that show's going to be a blowout.
And it's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
So we're going to do we're calling it a national town hall, which I know seems a little crazy because how do you do a national town hall on the radio? But we're doing it anyway. And you'll be able to connect in by phone, obviously, by chat, by email. So we'll have all those venues available. And we're asking that the people who pitch in on the discussion, that you obviously this is a self-regulated thing, but we want you to have read the book.
That's important.
It's, you got to read the book. And actually, if you go to the webpage for that March 1st thing, you can RSVP for that. Mr. Wood has kind of taken...
Did you give him the name of the book?
He's kind of keeping track of that. Technocracy
Rising. Yes.
And the book is on there. You can buy the book on there. And the RSVP, and what was the other thing? There was something else. Anyway, you can send that out to your friends and stuff. But I think it's going to be a great discussion. He sent me yesterday, of course, I can't find it now that I want to just look it up. He sent me a list of all the towns that have RSVP'd. Holy cow. We've got people in Canada, Florida, Texas, Arizona, California.
New Jersey.
Yeah, Wyoming. Yeah, New Jersey, Connecticut.
Texas.
All over the place.
Yeah, they're all over.
So this is really starting to pick up steam. He had a whole bunch of people who picked up on that yesterday. And I do think, interestingly enough, that one of the things that's driving the tremendous amount of participation and also the traffic. The traffic on our website has just been gigantic. Let's see.
Can we assume that some of these people have actually listened to the show before?
Yeah. I'm assuming so. So there's a whole bunch of people out there listening. But the page, our website's up to 4,400 hits, and that's since December 1st. I put up a new site December 7th, actually, is when it was our first show. So in like 2.5 months, somehow 4,400 times, and it doesn't count the times I go to edit. I did check that. But I think a lot of it's due to Twitter. I guess that was my point in saying that, mm-hmm. was we didn't have that type of really big volume, but Twitter is doing a lot for that. So if you've kind of hung back on that, it is easy, it's fast.
And you gotta learn to tweet.
And apparently people are interactive. I mean, they will click the link and look at what you're sending out, much more than Facebook. That seems to be very limited. We've always had a Facebook page, and we've never had that kind of traffic. So anyway, just a hot tip for you. How are we doing with our doctor? See, do we have him trapped in there?
He's trapped in the phone system somewhere.
I did not know that.
Hello.
You're so fast, I didn't see you dial, Bob. Gotta watch. We have to watch him every minute. It's a lot of work. Hey, so we're talking about Well, I titled the show, it's kind of an awkward title, but I said, Doctor Stops Accepting Insurance Turns Obamacare on Its Head. I sort of messed around a little bit with your Wall Street Journal article. So we have Dr. Gerard. I'm gonna go for
Giannoli.
Giannoli. I was going to say that, but I was scared.
I was like, it's got to be Giannoli. What else is there, right?
That's right. Thank you for having me on the show.
We just think your idea of taking yourself out of the insurance. My doctor does that, actually.
Congratulations.
They still do the billing, but I already know what I'm going to pay, and then they just float it over to the insurance and, you know, it sits there because I have a $9 million deductible.
I loved your article in the Wall Street Journal as well. That really spells it out. And I think you're right. I think that's going to be the direction of
healthcare. We're
going
to have to.
Yeah, we're going to have to.
I think we were just a little bit ahead of our times when we started doing this. There seems to be sort of a tidal wave happening with regards to that.
And you're in Louisiana.
Yes, ma'am, in Covington, Louisiana, which is just north of New Orleans.
Okay, and you started doing this when? Before the healthcare thing or like kind of during that ugly?
Actually, before. We started moving toward this model, believe it or not, in 2001, and we finished in 2005 when we cut our last contract with an insurance company. And from 2005 to the present, we've had absolutely no insurance contracts with anybody. We don't have any contracts with Medicare, Medicaid, Blue Cross, you name it. We only work for our patients, not for anybody else. The way it works is patients will call our office, and on the phone, before they even schedule the appointment, they're told how much it's going to cost.
Yeah, nice.
So they can decide whether it's worth the value that they're going to spend before they even make the appointment. After they come in, they're expected to pay at the time of service. And, you know, we accept cash, credit cards. You know, I mean, we're not discriminatory with that regard. And then we give them a HICFA form, which they will then submit to their own insurance company. It's simply all they'd have to do is sign it, put it in an envelope, and seal it and mail it off. And the insurance company will reimburse the patient based on the patient's individual insurance.
So they submit that form and just give them a copy of your bill, or?
Well, it's a HICFA form. It's got all the fancy codes that we have to write.
Oh, okay.
Write in,
so you do the legwork. You do all the hard stuff. All they got to do is mail it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it's really not the hard stuff. Is really not that hard because it's just a matter of punching the codes into the form, and it spits out at the end of the visit.
Hmm.
Well, that's...
And so then the patient, like I said, gets reimbursed whatever their insurance is. And really it depends on the individual patient's insurance. From the insurance company standpoint, we're considered out of network for anybody. Like, if, let's say you have Blue Cross and you come to see us, Blue Cross just sees us as out of network. And as you know, when you look at your own insurance plan, you'll see, okay, if I'm in network, they're going to pay 90% of my doctor's bill. And if I go out of network, they only pay 70%. But one of the things they don't tell you is that they pay 70% of a much higher number.
Oh.
In other words, they're trying to make you think you're going to pay a whole lot more if you go out of network. And you may pay more, but they're going to pay a whole lot more because it's a 70% of a much higher number. Because the way they get doctors into their insurance panels is they say, okay, you sign up with us, we're going to send you a whole bunch of patients, but in return, you have to agree to these low fees. And that's how they get the doctors in. If you're not in their panel, I haven't agreed to any fee with Blue Cross. And so consequently, actually there's been some lawsuits over this where some of the insurance companies have not paid the out-of-network portions in a reasonable fashion. And there's been some multi-million dollar lawsuits regarding that to kind of like, you know, keep the insurance companies in line.
Yeah, well, that makes sense.
So the insurance companies don't like this model?
Oh, gosh, no. No, they'd much rather have you stay in network where they have control over the doctors. You know, for example, you know, one of the really interesting things that people don't know about is the classic is Blue Cross will say, or whoever, I don't want to pick on Blue Cross per se, but they'll say, okay, we're going to pay for this patient's, you know, visit or their surgery or whatever, and then they send the payment to your doctor. let's say they sent him $1,000, okay? Then a few months later, the insurance company will send the doctor a letter saying, you know, gee, we thought about this, and, you know, we really overpaid you for that. We're going to take back $400 of that.
Oh, my gosh, they can do that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, it's in their contract. Now, me, on the other hand, since I don't accept any money from the insurance company, they will occasionally send that letter to me, and we will send them back a letter saying, gee, you know, you never sent us any money at all, so you don't get any money back at all. And surprise, surprise, they never asked that money back from the patient.
Now, is the dollar amount that you charge, I walk in, you charge me, let's say, $100. The HIPAA form that you give me, is it claiming the $100 or is it claiming the rate that they'll pay?
Okay, first of all, it's a HICFA form, HICFA, which is actually an old, outdated thing. It's separate from HIPAA.
HIPAA is the privacy thing.
But what we have on the form is how much you paid exactly to the penny, what you paid. And it also has it broken down according to what we call CPT codes, current procedural technology codes, I believe is what it's
called. Who set those dollar amounts on those codes?
It's actually set by the AMA. They have a monopoly on this. And the reimbursement for all of the insurance companies is based on these codes and the diagnosis. And so we'll just split it up for the patient. Okay, we spent this much on the patient spent this much on this particular code, this much on that code, and send it off to the insurance company. And the interesting thing is sometimes they'll just completely say, oh, we don't pay for this particular code, period. You know, and it's just some of the vagaries of the insurance industry. One of the frustrations we had before we got out of the insurance company was all this just arbitrariness of how they pay.
Yeah.
What I deal with is vertigo and dizziness patients, and there's one particular test that's, you know, it's just a standard thing we've been doing for, gosh, probably 30 years. About 10 years ago, they just decided, you know, we think that's experimental. We're not going to pay for that anymore. And they just stopped paying for it.
You know, so every
patient
doctors,
that would come in,
know.
We would do that test, we would get zero for it.
Yeah.
Well, they do that with medication all the time.
Yeah, very true. Very true.
You know, they'll say that that's not used for that, so you can't get it for that. Really? Yeah. It was kind of an odd coincidence that the week that we were setting this interview up was the week that I had vertigo, by the way.
You need to come down. Let's evaluate you.
No kidding. I just want to point that out, that I was wishing you were closer.
Actually, the reason I can stay in business is because I do vertigo. I mean, my specialty is neuro-otology and skull-based surgery. And among the things that we specialize, one is vertigo. And right now, if you go see your doctor for vertigo, first of all, to really be able to diagnose someone with vertigo, you have to spend a lot of time with them with a very long history physical. You have to do very extensive testing, and you have to spend a lot of time counseling as to what's going on and what to do about it. First of all, that hour and a half you'll need to spend doing history and physical, the doctor is only going to get paid about as much as he would as if he spent 2 minutes cleaning wax out of someone's ear.
Oh, great.
Okay, so right off the bat, they have no big incentive to see somebody with vertigo and dizziness, or at least not to treat them correctly.
That's why there's no one here that I've found that actually does that.
Oh, well, this is why.
Yeah.
The second thing is the testing, they will reimburse for the testing less than what it costs to do the testing appropriately. So they're going to lose money on that. And third, they're not going to pay at all for all the time you're going to spend counseling the patient. So consequently, what my colleagues in neurotology, there's only about 200 board-certified neurotologists in the country, and among those, a lot of them, they just won't see dizzy patients at all. They just tell the patient, their receptionist up front, if someone calls up with vertigo dizziness problems, tell them I don't do that. And that's one of the ways they've dealt with it. Another way they'll do it is they'll say, okay, I'll see them, but I'll only see like one a week, in which case then you got a six-month waiting list.
Sure.
And then the third thing they do is, this is the more recent trend, is they've hired a nurse practitioner or a physician's assistant, and they just shunt them all to that particular person and tell them, look, if you find anything that really needs my attention, let me know.
Don't forget, so, there's always option four, where you put the little circle thing behind your ear that's supposed to do like the seasickness thing or whatever that is. And it has a little warning on the label that says it might cause you to be sleepy. I swear to God, that thing touched my ear and I was rendered unconscious for 8 hours. It was unbelievable.
Oh yeah, those will definitely make you sleepy. Absolutely.
Sleepy, yeah.
But consequently, what happens is most patients with vertigo and dizziness do not get adequately treated. And if they want to get adequately treated, they come see me where I charge them a reasonable price and I actually spend all the time they need. And that's how I've been able to stay in practice. Because otherwise, why go see me when you have to pay up front? Why not go see your $5 copay doctor?
Right.
Yeah. Well, and that's what they're trying to do, is get everybody to do that. And if you need anything more complicated, you should just go to the emergency room, because the insurance actually incentivizes you to go to the ER rather than your doctor anyway. So, yeah, it's a terrific system. We're definitely headed the right direction.
Well, in fairness, before, like, and we talked a little bit about this earlier, before Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act, things were not great. You know, we had problems with, you know, outrageous and ridiculous bills, you know, people not be able to get coverage when they had pre-existing conditions, all kinds of bureaucratic nonsense, escalating costs. But in what's happened since the Affordable Care Act, it's actually made all those problems worse. About the only one that's not made worse is the fact that you can't disallow somebody with a pre-existing condition. But almost everything else, the Affordable Care Act has actually kind of doubled down on the horrible system we had before.
Yeah, and didn't fix the lawsuits or any of that. We've got to take a quick break here. We're going to come right back.
Sure.
We're talking to Dr. Gianulli here this first hour regarding concierge-type medicine here as an alternative, which sounds like a good one. Second hour will be with Art Thompson from the John Birch Society. We're talking about the Article 5 Convention and how they don't support that. So for all of you that think that's a great idea, we're going to find out why it's not a great idea. Second hour.
And if you want an appointment with the doctor, he's in Louisiana.
He's in Louisiana, so you can book your plane ticket today.
Get right on that.
You can go with me. We'll carpool. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We're here at KCNR, 1460 AM.
When they move into your neighborhood, they take over for good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body. Then they go. What shall we do about them?
Alrighty, you're rejoining We the People Radio. We are here with Dr. Gerald Gianulli.
Did you miss the first line of that?
From Louisiana.
I
didn't know really
thing.
What that was about. Oh. I was just glossing over it.
Oh.
What did it mean? I know there is meaning.
It said, hello, you're in a place called Vertigo.
Oh! I had no idea there was a Vertigo song. Why didn't I think of that, Bob? Of course you know a Vertigo song. You know songs for everything. Okay, you get bonus points for that, actually. That was a three-pointer.
I have to go back to start.
Yeah, you lose. Okay, so doctor, this is the thing. We tried to do the math on the break. You know how it was better for you versus what they were paying before. Yeah, we don't get it.
Yeah, how is it cheaper? If you in your article you were saying that you can charge three, sometimes four times less than what it would cost if we went through an insurance company. But if I pay you, say $40 for a visit, what would the cost be if I went through a different doctor that went through insurance? I mean, how does that savings calculate to me?
Let me give you a real simple common example.
That's what I know.
There we go. There you
are. Okay, mammograms. Okay, something that most women get every year or every couple years or so.
Bill gets one every year.
My wife recently had. I ordered the mammogram for her. You know, being the inner-ear doctor that orders mammograms all the time, just
yeah,
kidding.
Yeah, right.
So I ordered a mammogram for her, and she went to get the mammogram done, and we have a big high deductible plan, $10,000 deductible, so we're going to have to pay everything, right? She asked the lady up front, well, let me just go ahead and pay now. And she said, oh, no, let's just run it through the insurance and let us bill you, you know. All right, she says. Okay, so a couple months later, we get the bill. The charge for the mammogram was $350, which is, from my experience, and this is something I investigated a few years back, that's a pretty average charge for screening mammograms in my area. With the insurance we have and the insurance discount, it was $250, which is maybe a little on the high end for what I've seen with others. I think Medicare will pay $130, and the insurers will pay anywhere from $130 to $250, somewhere up in there. However, if you would have paid cash in advance, particularly during Breast Cancer Awareness Week, it would have been $40 to $50.
But does the insurance pay the $250, or are they kicking that back?
No, I do. That's with the insurance discounts. It's brought it down to $250. So we would have been, it would have been cheaper for us to not use our insurance and just pay cash. And I know everybody's going to say, well, that's just weird and bizarre. Well, but think of it like this. The radiology unit is sitting there thinking, okay, we can get $40 or $50 from this person now, cash in hand, no question about it. Or we can get a promise that they might send us a check for $250 later on.
Right.
And if they don't send the $250, then we have to expend resources of our $20 an hour personnel to track down that from the insurance company or from the patient, and eventually have to turn it up to a collection service. And, you know, when you're paying an employee $20 an hour, how long before they eat up most of your profit?
Yeah, you're going to get $40 anyway.
Yeah. So from the radiology unit, if they're guaranteed they're going to get paid $50, they're going to take it every single time. And it's kind of the same thing with my office. I don't have to charge outrageous amounts for you to subsidize the other guy that's not going to pay me. I just charge a reasonable amount for the service because I'm going to get paid. I know I'm going to get paid. We have zero accounts receivable for my office.
Mm-hmm.
And so consequently, my fees are roughly about a fourth of what my colleagues are.
And you the patient can still go back and claim that $50 on the
absolutely.
Insurance. Right.
Absolutely. And again, it really depends on their individual insurance. I've had patients who actually had one who told me, gee, doc, your bill is cheap. They told me they had approved it for like three times as much. And that's the thing. The reason why the doctor's cash prices are so high is because there is the occasional insurance company that will pay them these really high amounts. And that's another thing people think about. Well, gosh, you know, aren't the insurance companies out there trying to bargain for the best price?
Mm-mm.
And not really. The insurance company really doesn't care how much they pay for any one service. All they care about is sounding like they care. Because what they do is, let's say they bargain the price down to $100. Well, what they do is then they just tack on, you know, 10, 20 bucks for their profit and pass it on to you. You're the one that's paying for it with your premiums. You know, so whether it's $100 or $300, as long as they're getting their 20 bucks, they don't care.
Right.
Sure. Now, you mentioned three different ways this could be done. The regular way, where you go in and, you know, it all goes through the insurance. I think everybody's pretty conversant with that. Then there is this called concierge, or
no.
Is it the membership part that's called concierge?
Actually, yeah. Let me clear that up for you. There's two types of practices that I kind of wrote about in the Wall Street Journal article. There's the first one that everybody hears a lot about, and there's a television show about it called concierge medicine. Concierge medicine is mainly primary care doctors, internal medicine, family practice, pediatrics. And what it is, you pay a subscription fee, whether it's $100 a month or whatever. And for that fee, you get 24/7 access to the doctor. You often will get their cell phone number. You get promise to have extended long visit however long you need, and the doctor also typically promises to have a reduced number of patients so he has time for you. You know, whereas the typical internal medicine doctor may have, you know, 5,000 patients in his practice. The concierge doctor will probably have somewhere between 300 and 500 patients.
Mm.
Now, and each one of those concierge practices works a little bit differently. There's a little different little twist on the theme. That's not what I have. I have what we call a third-party free practice. For a third-party free practice, it's basically I have no contracts with any insurance company. The patients pay me. I give them their receipt or HICFA form, and then they deal with their own insurance company. And it's just it's basically how medicine was before the early 90s. There's a number of doctors out there doing this. Back when we started doing it, less than 1% of doctors were doing third-party free medicine or cash-based practices of some sort. Now we're at 7.5%. There's another 12.5% that are probably going to do so in the next couple of years, according to a Physicians Foundation poll of 20,000 doctors. Another interesting phenomenon that's happening while this is happening is kind of going in the opposite direction. 2008, the Physicians Foundation poll found that there were over two-thirds of doctors were private practice owners. Fast forward 6 years to 2014, now it's only about one-third of doctors are private practice owners.
Oh, wow.
And that's a huge shift in not just the loss of a lot of private, you know, basically small businesses, which
sure.
is certainly going to hurt from the economic standpoint, but it also changes drastically how doctors will practice medicine. Most of these people have not gone and become third-party free practices like myself. They've become employees to large hospital corporations.
Right.
Consequently, they have another layer of bureaucracy on top of their shoulders. And my colleagues that have gone from private practice to becoming employees of hospital systems, I really feel sorry for you, for them. And they are a very, very unhappy group. What's happened is you've taken a bad situation and you've made it worse. You've gone from being in the frying pan into the fire. When you were dealing with all these third-party payment systems, you had this conflict of interest. You're being asked for services by the patient, but you're being paid by the insurance company. So you got to wonder, which boss are you going to listen to, the one that's demanding services or the one that's paying you? And there's going to be a big natural tendency to do what the one that's paying you wants you to do. Consequently, once they become an employee, that gets magnified. And their boss, the hospital corporation, is going to be saying, and literally I know of doctors that have told me this, there are managers in the office with them with a stopwatch saying, gee, you know, you spent 10 minutes with that patient. You really were only supposed to spend 8 minutes with them.
Ugh.
Mm.
And
gotta
so on top of
sounds
that
like
other conflict of interest, now you've got a boss hammering you and telling you, okay, we're going to have to cut your salary for next year.
Wow.
Or fire you.
See, and that's your managed care. We do quite a bit on VA. We just had a doc on from our VA system, and that's the same thing. It's the HMOs and all that, the managed care where you have 12 and a half minutes, hurry, go, you know, and that's probably actually a generous time limit.
Well, the ACOs is the next big thing that's coming that a lot of people don't quite understand what's going to happen with that. But basically, the accountable care organizations are just a big form of what we call capitation.
Hmm.
And these systems are going to be paid not to take care of people.
Mm-hmm.
Yikes.
That's a huge conflict of interest. The less people you take care of, the more money you're going to make.
Wow.
And it's not in the hands of the doctors. It's in the hands of bureaucrats and business executives at the big hospital corporations.
Sure. And so this hasn't it hasn't really increased care. It's actually just kind of narrowed. I'm picturing cattle, you know, in the chute there. It just kind of made it narrower. You guys have gotten out of the mix of that, but how long do you think it'll be before they outlaw what you're doing?
I think it's going to be quite a while because of the huge move of doctors from private practice into these hospital employment situations.
Mm, okay.
once they become employees, they have no control over the practice. They have to do whatever their boss tells them. They have to accept whatever insurance company contract their boss tells them to accept. And as long as there's a large portion there, I don't think they're going to come after doctors like me. Although there was a movement to nationalize licensure. And if they ever do that, right now licensure is a state thing, but if they ever get national licensure, the next step is going to be, well, in order for you to maintain your license, Dr. Gignoli, you're going to have to be part of Medicare, Medicaid, Obamacare, sure, et cetera. And in which case, that's when I either retire or I move my practice to the Bahamas.
Yeah, because at that point, you're totally under their control.
You can't go to Canada because it's already against the law in Canada. Oh, that's why they're coming here.
I could tell you stories about some of my Canadian patients.
Oh, good. Well, let's do that when we come back.
Okay.
Got to take a really swift break and thank our advertisers because you know what? They're great, and they make the shows possible. So you're listening to We the People Radio. Find us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Phone number here is 530-605-4567 at KCNR 1460 AM.
Doctor, my eyes have seen the years and the slow parade of fears till I cry. Now I want to understand. I have done all.
There you go, Dr. Gignoli. There's your theme song to Royal Pains.
Beautiful.
I told you Bob always has something up his sleeve. Hey, we've got Billy Bob on the line. He's got a question for you.
Yes, sir.
Fire away.
Billy Bob, you in there?
Hello?
Oh, am I on?
You're on, buddy.
Hey, well, thanks for taking my call. Bill and Aaron, great to have you back on the air. The odd hour in the afternoon makes it hard for me to listen, but I just caught this doctor talking about all the problems he's got. But I had this question, other than the fact that the last 45 minutes of this radio program has got me dizzy and I've got vertigo. And I've never had this problem before.
We need to put
so
a disclaimer
anyway, other
on
than
there.
That, can I ask the doctor one question? What is, and since he's an expert, and I can't imagine anybody, specializing in vertigo. I've never even had a friend that's had vertigo before. But anyway,
got me.
What is the most common cause? You know, a ninth floor suicide jump or what? You know, I mean, what causes this vertigo and what is your prescription? I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks, Billy.
Thank you. Thanks for the question, Billy Bob. The most common cause of vertigo is something called benign paroxysmal positional vertigo. It is the most common cause. It is so common that I would dare say probably almost everybody will get it at some point in their life, and most of the time it won't require you to go see a doctor about it because it will go away on its own. But it's because there are two types of sensors in the inner ear. The semicircular canals that give you angular acceleration information and the otolithic organs, which give you gravity and linear acceleration. The otolithic organs have crystals on them, and when they break loose and wind up floating into the semicircular canal, you suddenly start getting gravity information on an angular accelerometer and screws up your input and gives you these brief bouts of vertigo.
Totally
so take that.
Sense. Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, well,
head trauma is probably the most common reason for it. Also, older age. As we get older, it gets more and more. It gets extremely common past the age of 70.
What about viruses?
viruses do account for some. Probably it's one of these ones where it's overestimated because so many people get labeled as a virus because the doctor has no idea what else to tell them.
But see, the thing that's funny is I went in to be tested because I had what looked like a kidney infection or something like that. But the morning I was going to go to the doctor's office, I rolled over in bed at like 3:30 and then pretty much couldn't stop throwing up. It was awesome. And then the kidney thing went away, which was great.
Well, you know, the story of rolling over in bed and the having the onset of vertigo is the classic description for the benign positional vertigo.
Nice. Mm. Yeah, it didn't go away for quite a while, though. It was a few days.
I know a lady that got vertigo. This was years ago. And she bent over in a store one day and stood up. And that was it. She was in bed for like 6 months. She could not get out of bed.
And the sad thing about it is that's actually a fairly easy thing to fix. If it's appropriately diagnosed, there's a 5-10 minute office procedure you can do to make it go away.
Yeah, I've heard like a rotating of the head type of thing.
Right. It's the gentleman John Epley from Portland, Oregon.
The Epley procedure. I've heard of
that. Yeah, he devised the most commonly used procedure.
Mexico.
And we actually have something called the Epley Omniax chair, which you strap the patient in. You can turn him in any direction you want, which Dr. Epley developed years later.
50 shades of gray
to fix
there.
It. But it's actually a fairly easy thing to fix.
I have to go clobber Bill. Just go ahead. You kids talk amongst yourselves.
Here, I thought we were going to get through the weekend without mentioning that movie.
No, we weren't.
I'm sorry.
Jeez Louise. We were talking on the, always on the break, all of a sudden we have all these questions. So we were mulling it over. If you have this, if you decide to pay cash, okay, if you're just regular patient person,
third
right,
party
with no medical skills, so you're going to need medical people to help you. So let's just say you decide to pay cash for everything and you don't carry insurance. Well, I guess it's against the law now, depending on how you view that.
There's a legal way of doing that if you want to know.
Yeah, what do they do with, let's just even say that
technically
they're...
I don't have insurance.
Okay. Do we still have catastrophic plans for, what if
you
get cancer or fall off a building or something?
The Obamacare has made catastrophic plans illegal with one exception. There's these things called faith health ministries. And there's four of them that I know of where it's basically, it's exempt from Obamacare. And it's Christian organizations where people are basically just sharing medical expenses, but it functions like a catastrophic insurance policy. And the prices for it or the premiums for it are significantly lower than what you would get with one of the insurance companies. To give you an example, a neighbor around the block from me who has husband, wife, and four children, for a similar policy to what I've got, high deductible, with, and I'm not sure which insurance, it's one of the major insurance companies they have, they're going to be paying $1,700 a month.
Oh.
And they have a $10,000 deductible. So you're talking about, putting out a lot of money before the insurance company puts out a single dime on you. My policy with, it's Christian MediShare is the one I have. It's a similar policy, but it's basically just a true major medical policy. I pay $280 a month.
Ah. And how do people find out about that?
They don't carry or they don't cover like just simple go to the doctor for a runny nose, stuff like that. I mean,
they do, but they don't cover things that are known expected expenses. For example, the screening mammogram you're supposed to get every other year, whatever it is, that's a known expected expense, so they don't cover that. But as I mentioned earlier, they do have discounts put in so you don't get gouged the $350. You only have to pay the $250. But, again, if you're smarter than that, you can even go ahead of time, not even use your insurance and pay less.
Right.
They don't cover things that are not of the Christian beliefs. In other words, it won't cover abortion services or birth control services. But in truthfulness, those are elective things that people can decide whether they want to pay for or not. And I give the analogy of having insurance for your car. You can get a policy where it covers you if you have a major accident that costs tens of thousands of dollars to fix, Or you can have a policy that covers your oil change and to pay for your gas and to pay for you to change your tires. And, of course, it's going to cost more than what it costs to get your oil change and get your gas and change your tires, because you got to pay this third person in there to accommodate things.
Sure. Now, how do people find out about those plans?
Well, Christian MediShare is on the Internet, and you can just, I think you just put in MediShare.com or something like that. There's another one called Samaritan, and there's two others that I don't know the names of. But they're all exempt from the Affordable Care Act, and significantly lower prices and gets rid of all the craziness with it, all the stupid mandates. The other thing I should mention is a website called MediBid. Okay. MediBid, MediBid.com. MediBid is sort of like an auction site for medical services. Let's say you want to have, let's say you want to get a CT scan of your head or a CT scan of your knee, and you want to find out what's the best cash price. You log into the site, you put in there, and they bid for your services. Mm. And you get the lowest cash price available in your area. And then the other resource your listeners probably need to know about is the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, that's AAPSonline.org, and they keep a database of all the doctors in the country that have some sort of cash-based practice.
Oh, wow.
And there are doctors all over the country doing this, in particular with regards to primary care. And they have various types of formats. Some will do the concierge practice. Some will have just inexpensive office visits where it's $40 a visit. There's an orthopedic surgeon I met last week who has dumped his old practice, and now he has two fees. One is for new patients and one is for existing patients. The new patient fee is $300, and for that $300, you get history, physical, any x-ray you need, and you get casting or splinting.
Hmm.
And
wow,
that's probably 90% of all orthopedics right there. And then return visits, I think you said, was $80.
Yeah, you would really have to do your homework on this, because I can see if the difference between a third-party program versus concierge. If you're 20-something, you might be better off with third-party because you're not going to go to the doctor. But then if you were like a single parent with two or three kids, where you got to take a kid to a doctor every other week, concierge might be better for you. So,
I can tell you probably the easiest way to fix this for everybody is if it was made illegal for insurance companies to have contracts with doctors and hospitals, because that's what screwed things up, as well as Medicare, because they've gone through screwing up the free market process. We've not had a true free market in medicine since the early 60s with the introduction of Medicare, and that's what made the prices start spiraling out of control. And if you eliminate that, then you'll have true free market competition. And the way I can prove that to you is look at the aspects of medicine where those things have not been in play. LASIK surgery for your eyes, any kind of refractive eye surgery, cosmetic surgery, the prices are actually lower now than they were 10 years ago, and the services are better.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. I forgot about that. That has gone down.
Because that's definitely a free market type thing. I mean, everybody is going to be out there bidding for your business.
And it's because there is no insurance involved. Medicare is not involved.
Right.
Once you put those in there, the prices go up.
Right. Hmm. Good
lovely
point. Good point.
I could tell you two Canadian stories if you're interested.
Oh, yeah. That's right. We forgot about that.
I have one patient from Canada who took a picture of a sign outside of her primary care doctor's office in Canada, and she emailed it to me. And the crux of the sign was this. It said, all visits are restricted to 10 minutes and two questions.
Oh.
Oh, wow.
And that's because if he
genie?
Doesn't restrict things, he can't get through his day because he's got so much demand on his time. The other is a patient that came to see me. And what happened was she would send me all of her information before she came to visit. And I sent her an email back saying, okay, well, the one thing we don't have that we need before you come visit is an MRI scan. I can get one here for you. I can work out a cash price of $500 for you, and we can get it done when you're here, or you can get it done up in Canada. And she said, well, I can get it for free here in Canada. Let me just do that. Okay, this was in January. She comes down. We get her evaluation, and I'm like, well, you know, we really need that MRI scan. We don't have it. And she said, oh, it's scheduled. And I said, when's it scheduled for? It's scheduled for in October.
Oh, nice.
Anyway, she finally gets it done in October, and she sends it to me saying the radiologist read it out as normal. And I look at it, and it's not normal. They missed a large Chiari malformation, and I sent her back saying it's wrong. And so she brings it back to her primary care doctor, who says, well, I can't do anything about this. The radiologist report says it's normal. Well, have the radiologist look at it again. He won't look at it again. He then had to send it to a neurologist another 6 months before she can get to the neurologist. Neurologist looks at it and said, oh, of course, you've got a Chiari malformation here. Let's send you to a neurosurgeon. Another 6 months before you go see the neurosurgeon. So basically, just with that little shenanigans, you're talking about a year and a half or more delay in care, and this lady was suffering the whole time.
Nice. And that makes for excellent medical care, you know, when the people are actually suffering while they're waiting. That's terrific.
Yep.
That's when we know we've arrived. Good grief. Well, you know, we really turns out we had a lot more questions than we had answers.
Yeah. We could have done 2 hours with you.
we're gonna have to force you to come back and talk to us some more.
I'd be happy to.
Thank you very much. We really appreciate it. And I've listed the links for the Christian MediShare, the MediBid, and the AAPS online. So for those people that might be driving or something thinking, oh, great, how am I going to remember that? On the website, wethepeopleradio.us. Thank you, Dr. Giannoli. We appreciate you and wish you were closer.
My pleasure being here.
Thanks a lot. We'll be right back with Art Thompson from the John Birch Society. We'll be talking about the Article 5 Constitutional Convention and why that's a bad idea. You're listening to KCNR 1460 AM, Shasta Redding.